Welcome to Safety Net, a patient safety podcast with news, trends, and ideas from CRICO, the insurance program for all of the Harvard medical institutions and their affiliates, bringing a data-driven approach to reducing medical error through clinical analysis of malpractice claims. It is a long-standing complaint. Designing and implementing interventions to make healthcare safer costs money, but showing a return on investment in patient safety and quality is challenging. That, in turn, can make it more difficult for leaders in those areas to secure support for improvement initiatives that move the dial. But new methods of looking at these investments might be able to turn more heads. At a recent gathering of patient safety experts in Boston, sponsored by CRICO's Candelo division, two Harvard researchers shared how they have successfully approached this quandary. Dr. Adam Schaefer is a hospitalist and senior clinical analytics specialist for CRICO, the patient safety and malpractice insurance company for the Harvard medical community. According to Dr. Schaefer, unlike traditional thinking in other domains, a return on investment, or ROI, of zero can be considered a success for patient safety.
You know, an ROI of zero means that the program neither gained nor lost money. And if you're talking about a financial context, an ROI of zero is unquestionably going to be considered a failure because, you know, when you're investing your money, you want to make money. But within the patient safety sphere, an ROI of zero means that a program was sort of cost neutral, and in many situations, that'll actually be considered a success. Leaders are receptive to supporting things that don't cost them money.
Dr. Schaefer talked about how malpractice data have typically been used for ROI analysis. He called it ROI version 1.0, which shows high malpractice dollar values attached to something that you want to prevent with a safety program. He used data from the National Practitioner Data Bank to show that the dollar values for payouts are significant.
The average was $356,000. The median was about $200,000. And then, you know, the cases that keep us up at night, as you get, let's say, to the top decile, you're approaching $1 million. So, we're talking about malpractice cases that are going to be $500,000, $750,000, $1 million. You know, preventing a very small number will really very substantially offset some of the investment in some of the patient safety programs.
As an example, Dr. Schaefer described a current proposal at a hospital to implement a rapid response system in the inpatient areas. At a high level, if the data say that 60% of failure to rescue cases in the data set closed with payment, and the mean payment was $900,000, then this gets people's attention. Limits on this method, however, include the reality that no single program can prevent 100% of errors in its area of focus that lead to malpractice cases. According to Dr. Schaefer, Return on Investment version 2.0 looks at historical coded malpractice data and subtler characteristics and contributing factors that reviewers attach to every single case. Reviewing the prior malpractice cases allows you to determine what proportion of them the patient safety intervention would likely prevent.
So what you're doing is you're going through the relevant malpractice cases you have historically so that you can get an objectively determined probability of success term, which then allows you to give a much more sort of sophisticated analysis of how much money in terms of malpractice indemnity payments you can anticipate saving with the patient safety intervention.
This case-by-case analysis using standardized codes already assigned to the data is a key advancement for this kind of patient safety ROI. To illustrate this ROI 2.0 method, Dr. Schaefer described an intervention called ambulatory safety nets, which uses EHR registries and patient navigators to follow up with patients who don't get the recommended repeat colonoscopies. The case example is a 60-year-old male who undergoes a colonoscopy with a recommendation to repeat it after 3 years, but he doesn't go for follow-up.
He never undergoes the repeat colonoscopy. He says he was never actually notified that this repeat colonoscopy was required. He doesn't undergo that necessary repeat colonoscopy. And then 6 years later, he's diagnosed with metastatic colon cancer. A malpractice case is filed, and then, an indemnity payment of $650,000 is made.
That $650,000 can be considered cost savings from implementing an ambulatory safety net intervention because of the high probability the follow-up would have prevented the cancer. It adds up to a powerful argument when applied across many cases. Dr. Schaefer says this ROI analysis can also help fine-tune and improve the intervention itself.
The aspect of this, which was really a revelation for me as we were reviewing each of our cases to say, would this patient safety intervention, would the colon cancer ASN have potentially prevented this case, is it really allows you to think about what can we do to augment, what can we do to enhance this patient safety intervention so we can prevent a larger number of the cases.
It can be important for ROI arguments to show that an intervention program actually works. Expanded adoption of a patient safety intervention provides another kind of ROI validation by evaluating the program after it has been implemented. Dr. Christopher Landrigan illustrated this aspect for the audience using his IPASS program as an illustration. Dr. Landrigan is chief of the Division of General Pediatrics at Boston Children's Hospital. IPASS is a structured method of handing off patients at shift changes or other transitions, and it stands for Illness Severity, Patient Summary, Action List, and Situational Awareness and Contingency. Dr. Landrigan says that research has consistently shown handoffs as a significant vulnerability for patient safety and medical malpractice.
With a few minutes of talking through that a little bit and just trying to explain why do we care about this issue of miscommunications and handoff failures in healthcare. So, you know, if you look to the left-hand side of the slide here, these are data.
Dr. Landrigan cited an article in the British Medical Journal showing medical error was the third largest cause of death in the United States. He shared data that show miscommunication as the most common root cause of sentinel events reported to the Joint Commission. He says half of those miscommunications are handoff failures.
Some failure to transmit information or some, you know, misinformation that's passed off either a change of shift or when a patient changes locations from the within the inpatient setting, inpatient to outpatient, outpatient to inpatient, you name it.
When Dr. Landrigan's team set out to address the underlying issues 16 years ago, they used broad malpractice data to identify big opportunities for improved communication during handoffs and applied for grants to move into an intervention phase at the hospital level. At the same time, the impact of relatively recent changes in resident work hours with shorter shifts and added handoffs of patients from one provider to another became apparent.
The handoffs between those physicians were just a disaster. I mean, there basically was no standardization to them whatsoever. You know, the residents would show up on rounds in the morning and have no idea about the basic details of a patient who had been admitted the night before because there had not been a good exchange of information between the night team and the day team. And so we started thinking about, you know, what could we do to just try to structure this process a little bit?
Their intervention included training so transitions for each patient covered the IPASS elements. Policies required appropriate environmental surroundings for adequate transfer of information about each patient from provider to provider. Their local experiment led to a drop in medical errors. With their initial success, they received more funding to expand to more sites, and they put significant effort into measuring how their interventions affected error rates and workflows. They continued to see wider receptivity to IPASS as they acquired more data, including findings that showed the program reduced errors at institutions by 30% without a major impact on clinician time. Subsequent studies showed similar effects after the implementation with nursing staff. Dr. Landrigan said that an ROI analysis provided additional support as he sought to implement IPASS more widely. For a 2023 study in the Journal of Patient Safety, he says they went back to malpractice data and used the kind of ROI 2.0 that Dr. Schaefer described on a random sample of malpractice cases with handoff failures. Looking closely at the contributing factors assigned to each case, Dr. Landrigan's researchers found that the most common factors contributing to these handoff communication failures involved patient diagnosis, contingency planning, and other elements of a structured transition communication that IPASS was designed to enhance.
They then began to attach some dollar figures to miscommunication and handoff-related claims as compared with other claims, and it turns out that handoff-related failures are almost twice as expensive as other claims, in large part, we think, because when there's a failure of the surgeon and the pediatrician to talk to one another about something that goes wrong, largely those things are indefensible. And so what they were finding is that those things tended to go to settlement relatively quickly. They were pretty rarely denied or dismissed, and the settlements tended to be significantly larger than the average.
Dr. Landrigan's researchers found that a structured communication program at Handoff would have prevented 77% of those claims. If extrapolated to all malpractice claims, a Handoff tool has the potential to reduce all malpractice claims by 19% and costs by 27%. IPAS has been expanding to health systems nationally and has garnered interest from the entire state of Kentucky. Both Drs. Landrigan and Schaefer urge patient safety champions to think of impacts beyond financial savings. Financial calculations have their place, but other benefits should be considered, such as reputational risk, staff well-being, and health equity. Dr. Schaefer shared studies demonstrating that reducing lawsuits affects clinician burnout and retention rates. He also shared that AHRQ has a resource to assist with calculating ROI. Typical things are service operating costs like supplies and equipment and staff, medical costs avoided, productivity changes, readmissions, length of stay, etc. According to Dr. Landrigan, ROI analysis ultimately serves as both a financial and ethical argument for change. While patient safety interventions should be pursued because they are the right thing to do, demonstrating financial feasibility makes them far more likely to gain traction with leadership. When an intervention like IPAS can prove cost neutrality, or better yet, deliver cost savings, it clears the path for widespread, sustained adoption.
As we have moved forward and begun to work with malpractice carriers as well as CFOs within hospitals and so forth to try to make the case for doing this, we have shared these numbers. We can often, if they're willing to share it with us, if they can share their malpractice data with us, we can plug it in and sort of into a calculator that spits back out for them what their anticipated savings would be over a particular period of time. And at least in a few cases now, that's been really compelling for them to put this thing, up to the top of the queue, where this is not just about patient safety benefit now, but there really are savings for this.
And in a healthcare landscape where resources are tight, that can be the deciding factor in whether patient safety initiatives move forward or stall. I'm Tom Agello for SafetyNet. Thank you for listening to SafetyNet, a podcast of news, trends, and ideas from CRICO in the Harvard Medical System. Find all of our podcasts at www.rmf.harvard.edu/podcasts and subscribe. Find us wherever you get your podcasts, and then rate and review the show to help others find it too.